Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is understanding sensitivity. We would have heard this term sensitivity more in connection with certain instruments. We say that a weighing machine is very sensitive. Even if you put a mustard seed, it shows its indicator moves slightly, showing that it is half a gram or less than half a gram. That's an extremely sensitive weighing machine. Thermometer can be also similarly very sensitive. A slight rise in temperature and the thermometer will show that. And we can multiply examples of these instruments which we call sensitive. It's more or less the same idea when we talk about physical sensitivity. Applied to human beings, we can speak of physical sensitivity, psychic sensitivity, emotional sensitivity, and spiritual sensitivity. The physical sensitivity, as we know, applies to physical man, to his senses. We think and talk about hypersensitive person. Now, hypersensitive person could be in one of the many ways. For some, the sense of hearing is very acute. He is hypersensitive as far as hearing is concerned. A whisper and the person is able to pick up the sound. And I think in our colloquial language we say kasari na kaan. The person has kasari na kaan, picking up the slightest kind of a sound. Similarly, we have people who have a very sensitive tongue. They can differentiate one flavor from the other. They can know slightly less salt or slightly more salt in the whatever is prepared, and maybe slightly less sugar and slightly more sugar, and they are able to make that out. A very sensitive tongue, we say. Sensitivity of touch. We know that story. We all of us know. We would have read as children Hans Christian Andersen's story of the princess and the pea. And we know how there was this prince who had decided that he will marry a princess who is truly and really a princess. And it so happens that it's a very rainy day and there is this young girl who comes, who is supposed to be a princess, and knocks at the door. She is very completely drenched and she wants an asylum in the palace for that night, and she would go away in the morning. So the queen also has the idea that, is she really a princess? So then she removes the beddings from the cot and puts a pea on that cot. Pea means vatana no dana. And then over that she is going to spread mattresses after mattresses, quilts after quilts. We would say ganabada gadla she puts over it. And then the princess is made to sleep on it. She wants to see what happens, you see. And then when she wakes up in the morning, she complains that, I don't know, I was very uncomfortable. There was something very hard beneath my bed. That is the quilts and all that. So this is the mark of a princess. Only a princess can make out that there is a pea which is put, or whatever, there is something bothering her. That sensitivity as far as the touch is concerned. This is a story, but this is also a sensitivity. People can be very sensitive to touch. And then there is the other example, the other extreme. And we have Ramakrishna Paramhamsa, and we have his chela, Vivekananda, who puts a coin. Those days, I don't think there was a 1 rupee or 2 rupee coin. It must have been 25 paisa coin or 50 paisa coin, which he puts beneath his pillow. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, he just can't sleep. And then this chela comes and removes a coin and then finds that he's able to sleep now. You see, the idea was that always Ramakrishna Paramhamsa used to say that he has never touched money. And he would feel very uncomfortable handling money. Now this is not really sensitivity as far as the physical or psychic touch is concerned. This is spiritual sensitivity. as Mr. Jat says, there is a very peculiar elementals connected with money and peculiar magnetism. Not a very positive magnetism which is connected with money or precious metals or diamonds. Very typical kind of magnetism is there, and someone who is advanced would not want to really touch that thing and spoil the magnetism of his own inner being or the body. So this is a spiritual sensitivity we get the example of. Similarly, acuteness of seeing, and HPB gives examples of those Kashmiri girls who are able to differentiate 300 different shades of color. Many shades of green, many shades of red, many shades of blue and so on, which even a dyer, the one who is a rangara, who is really dyeing the cloth, even he can't make out. But the Kashmiri girls who are doing the work with various kinds of colored threads, they can differentiate 300 different shades of colors. This is acuteness of the eye. From the physical sensitivity, this is the sensitivity of eye. Differentiating a change, differentiating change in color and sound and touch and so on with the physical senses. What about psychic senses? We are being told that we are living in the age of psychism. And more examples of people whose psychic senses or astral senses have been really developed. So we are having people who are able to see things happening at a distance, clairvoyant faculty. They can hear things happening at a distance. They can know about the past. They can know about the future. These are various psychic or the astral senses. And these have been either developed in a manner which is not the proper way of development, or over a period of time as they make their spiritual progress, they are able to develop one by one these psychic senses. And in that, you have one particular example which is a blend, you can say, of the sight as well as touch. And that is what HPB calls as a kind of an inner perception, which comes about in psychometry. Now, according to HPB, every family, in five families, there is one family which has a psychometer in the family. One is not too sure, but she does mention something like that. And what is this psychometry? Psychometry is something where a person can pick up in his palm, say, a stone, a paper, a manuscript, a painting, a jewelry, bangle, earring, which has been handled by a person or persons. Either he holds it in his palm or he puts it against his forehead. And immediately he is able to tell about what that person looks like, what he was thinking at that time, what was his feeling like. She gives one example that supposing a person stands near a tree and he gives vent to his anger, all that anger and frustration, he takes it out standing underneath the tree. And she says that thousands of years later, some psychometer going and touching maybe the stem of the tree or even a branch of that tree where this person was standing and giving vent to his anger, he will be able to see that person. And also he will be able to know exactly what were his feelings, his thoughts, what he spoke, everything. We are in fact told that someone who discovered this psychometry after HPB spoke about it, he has written about someone who was called a graphologist. And he's the person who used to look at people's handwriting, pick up that paper in his hand, look at the handwriting, and exactly like a psychometer would do, he will be able to tell about what that person, what personality he had, what he thought, what he was planning to do. In one case, he took the paper and he exactly described the personality, thoughts, etc., and said that while writing this, he was contemplating that he is going to commit a murder. So much. Now, how does this happen? Here, of course, there are the inner senses at work, inner perception is at work, and HPB's explanation is that when you pick up that particular say, a stone or maybe the bark of the tree, whatever, or you touch it. Then there are these emanations which are going out from the object, and they put this person in touch with the astral currents. Astral currents in which all of this whole history of the thing is recorded. When this stone was handled by someone, what exactly happened is already registered in the astral light, in the astral currents. And when you hold that object, and if you are psychically sensitive, you are able to know everything. All that happened in concern with that particular object. We are giving one very minor example to drive home the point, what is this psychic sensitivity? It's not as if we are asked to develop it. Some are abnormally developed, some are normally developed in the course of your own evolution. But there are a lot of people who come by it and they are psychically sensitive. They are psychically sensitive in a very minor way. Sometimes you hear a person, I entered the room and I felt someone had been quarreling there. If the atmosphere is charged with a lot of anger and frustration and quarrel, that sensitive person entering the room feels it. Someone sitting in the room for a long time had been in a depressed mood, that person absorbs those vibrations and feels that depression. This is psychic sensitivity. So that sensitivity is also there. One is able to gauge the vibrations, feel it, know about it. Now, the third kind of sensitivity would be emotional sensitivity. Most of the time, we are sensitive for our own feelings. We are very sensitive. We call that person touchy. Very touchy means what? If you tell that person anything about what clothes he is wearing or she is wearing, that something is not right, some answer which was given was not proper, anything adverse that was remarked about this person, and the person either feels depressed, dejected, angry, something or the other. This is what we call hypersensitive at emotional level. Touchy people. What happens? When people are touchy, psychoanalysts are going into it because there are lots of people that we don't know but are touchy, and it's not good for them. To be touchy about your own personality and your own feelings is not a good thing. And psychoanalysts will tell you that such are the people, you will find that they, as they go ahead in their life, they tend to be people who are impulsive. They will act on the impulse and emotion without giving any thought. They are impulsive people. Over a period of time, they tend to be extremely anxious people. They are more prone to depression. You see, because the whole attention is centered in the self. When your whole attention is centered in your own personality, you have made a very small world for yourself. Your horizon is narrow. And that's the reason why these are these psychological problems which you are going to encounter. So that is a very different kind of emotional sensitivity. Then of course it's very good if we are now stepping out of our own boundaries and thinking about someone else. And there is that emotional sensitivity which you find when we become sensitive to another's emotion. And therefore, we have people and we say that they are sympathetic or they are even empathetic. Sympathy is just feeling and trying to understand what is happening to that person. Empathy goes further and there is a kind of a self-identification. You are identified with that person. Very rarely we have that kind of empathy. Generally, two sisters, two very close friends, the mother and child, there is a great empathy. What happens to one happens to the other, even husband and wife. There is such a great empathy that far away, miles away the other person is, frightened or really at a loss as to what to do. And the other person here wakes up from sleep and comes to know something is wrong. That empathy, that closeness, that connectedness at an inner level, at the emotional level is there. So this is the empathy which is something which is very important for us to have. And if we don't have, we have to cultivate. And what is that empathy? They say that you have to put your foot in another shoe. We say that you'll know, only then you will know where the shoe pinches. How will you know if the shoe is pinching another person unless you wear that shoe and see where it pinches? Now, there are problems. People keep wearing that shoe and go home. That is to say, you are so totally involved in another's misery to such an extent that you are yourself, as it were, experiencing that misery. Is that good? So they say that yes, it's good to be empathetic, to wear the shoe and know where the shoe is pinching, but please remember to remove the shoe. Be yourself. And then probably you can think about it. On the other hand, we hear some people give their problems, narrate them to us and so on. And yes, for the time being, we are shaken. Loss of loved ones, loss of job, almost very some kind of a illness where you feel very helpless about because you can't do anything about it. You are inwardly shaken. And then you yourself wonder, you've gone home. And you are then busy with your things and you've forgotten all about it. That's why we are told in the reading also and in the handout also, let each human tear drop on thy heart and there remain, and never brush it off till the pain that caused it is removed. Now this is where the problem arises. We are still humanly empathetic. It's very good that we have empathy. But what use is that empathy? Either it lasts for a long time or it lasts for a little while. For the time being, we are all emotional about the problem. But are we capable of looking into it and relieving that misery? Very, very seldom. Because this is a human kind of empathy. But contrasted with that, you have something like insensitivity, which today is seen more and more. And that goes to the extreme and becomes a psychological disorder. There is something called empathy deficit disorder. It becomes a problem because people are not able to empathize. We do see this. There's time when we used to see a person cry and immediately tears would come in our own eyes. We will see someone who is very poor and immediately your hand will go into pocket and you would want to give something. All occasions, we were ready to act. Something was moving in the heart. We would carry it home. We will carry it through the day. These sights have become too common. It just shows how many people are miserable. But on the other hand, how many people are feeling the misery, that number is lessening. We are able to see that. Because mainly we have become self-centered. Mainly we have too many things of ours to take care of. I have a goal really to pursue. I have my own commitments. I have my own worries. I have my own problems. I have a job. I have this. I have that. And in the process, I am not able to pay really attention to any of these things. I see it. I notice it. Maybe moved a little and maybe not. And I move over. I'm not exactly heartless, but nearing that stage. Something is going wrong. It's going to such an extent that you would see that in the television. One person is being beaten. beaten like anything, a crowd grabbers. Nothing is done. To top it all, someone is nicely making a video of it. Just recently, I think there was a dam which was overflowing, and there is two families which simply got carried away. And initially there was some running around to see what we can use to save them. And finally, nothing was done. And yet there were quite a few people who were making videos. Just recently, someone had forwarded that. And yes, on the one hand, you feel, yes, they were helpless, but why so many people should make a video? Children's drama was there. And an instance, real instance. It was quite an irony which had to be drawn attention to. Children are performing this drama, and there is this child who is supposed to be a young man, and he is going to office, and then there is an accident. And then people are gathering, and then some are trying to call the ambulance, and some are carrying the body of the woman and things like that. He's a little far away, but he immediately starts making the video of it. In the end, he says, I'll put it on my Facebook or Instagram, whatever. And he says, it will give me or get me many likes. There's a craze for getting likes. So many likes, so many likes. For this video, for this thing. On this kind of thing, we want likes. And this is a real thing. And then in the end, in an hour, he comes to know his own mother had met with that accident. The video that he was taking was his own mother had met with the accident of which he was making a video. Beautifully done by children, but it was an eye-opener. Where are we? This is a real-life thing. Sensitivity is really, I think we are getting immune to these things which we keep watching day in and day out. Wars, we are eating and we are watching. Such kind of things, of course, sometimes we just change the channel, we can't bear to see it. But otherwise, to some extent, some bluntness has come. And we really need to wake up this sensitivity which is dying out. Stories like Anton Chekhov's story, with which you must be all familiar, called Misery. Very moving story. In those days, one cannot imagine humanity was like this. Must have been many years back. And the author is writing, Russian author, about an old man in Russia, winter time. He's a sledge driver, which we will call simply Goda Gadi Wala. And he has lost his son, young son. Now, 1 week has passed and he feels very restless at home. He has not spoken about it to anyone, poor man. And therefore, he is thinking of taking out his sledge and see if he can get any passenger. He gets a passenger, happens to be a police officer, army officer. And then musters up his courage and starts telling him, you know, sir, I have lost my young son just 1 week back. And this army officer's answer is, drive on, drive on. If we talk like this, I will be reaching destination only tomorrow. This is all he had to say, very harshly. He had no guts to carry on. Then comes three other people, young people, drunk, half drunk. This again, he's wanting to tell somebody. Can you imagine the plight? You are not able to unburden your pain. Every human being wants to unburden. And therefore, again he starts telling them, I've lost my son. And one of them very casually says, old man, we all are going to die one day. And then, of course, we are told that they get down. But before getting down, the old man still musters up his courage and tells them, you know, he was a very young man. He was in the hospital and he was recovering and I thought that he will be all right, but didn't. Is that the age for him to die? It is me who should have died. He just wants to say whether they are listening or not. And he comes across yet another person. He asks the time and begins conversation. He says, drive on. Everybody is saying drive on. They are not having time to listen whatever he has to say. And finally he decides, I can't carry on anymore. So he goes to that place where all the kodagariwalas are supposed to rest. Again looking at people, some are in their own world, some are sleeping, resting. And finally he looks at his own horse and says, let me try telling her, happens to be a she horse. And tells, you are a woman, as it were. If you had a baby horse, and if that baby horse died, how would you feel? Would you not feel miserable? And as it happened, she's munching her grass and happens to nod her head like this or like this, and he thinks, thank God, at least she is listening to me. Continues to tell, takes it off his chest. And the author says, he didn't find a single human being to unburden himself. It was an animal who could, in a way, listen to him. People have made comments. This is Anton Chekhov. Look at his depth looking into the human heart. Misery on one hand, insensitivity of people on the other hand are portrayed absolutely beautifully. And people commenting, it's a very, very old short story, are saying something very important. The greatest agony that a man can have is when he is seeing that he is surrounded by the crowd where people are physically present but emotionally absent. There is a very nice way, but it would be a little tough to understand, so we are putting in our own words. That is written by one of the authors who is commenting on the Anton Chekhov's thing. Indeed, the highly torturing agony of man is the sense of solitude that he feels in the presence of the absent individuals of the crowded world of indifference. The world of indifference. In that crowd, he finds himself and finds nobody is interested. And if we think that, what have I to do? I have my own problems. Or that, in a way, he has his problems, I have my problems. We are mistaken. And that's why Mr. Judge, at various times he says, don't think that we live in isolation or act in isolation. Sometimes we don't verbalize like this, but the behavior is like, I have my sorrows, he has own sorrows, and what is the connection? But if someone really wants to unburden himself, that's the least we can do, is give a sympathetic ear. Lend a sympathetic ear to the person and listen to that person. Give him a shoulder to cry on. This is one of the things which we are required to do today, because we all find, if you are traveling in the train, by bus, simply standing in the queue, and suddenly without your knowledge, the person strikes a casual conversation and you find he ends up telling his life history. He's carrying within him, doesn't know. Lots of young people today say, you know, I don't have anyone like I can call a close friend. Naturally, you don't start unburdening to a stranger or a casual person. Why are there not close friends? What has happened to human relationships? This is a real, real problem of our day. It's not Anton Chekhov's story, misery. The misery is being gone through by plenty of young people, plenty of old people also. Why do we have today NGOs, Samaritan and whatnot? Their work is only to have phone lines, several phone lines where you can just ring up, you can talk to the person, the volunteer, and they will listen to you. Whatever is your sadness, problem, they will listen to you. Why do we require that? Why are we not available to people? At least to listen. And of course we can and we should, because coming back to the point, what does Mr. Jack say? The indissoluble unity of the race demands that you recognize that every man's sorrow is part of, because of you, part of yourself. Because you must have had a hand in making his sorrow what it is today. It's not for the first time that we are being born. We have taken birth here for several times. In some way we would have come across these people. In some way we would have made our contribution to what he is suffering now. Our karma is really intertwined. Every man's sorrow is partly because of me. If he recognize that, then certainly I am going to really lend my ear to any person's sorrow and see to it what I can do about it. In fact, if we talk about spirituality, we are told that you can say that the yardstick for measuring spirituality. When can you say that I've advanced even a little in my spiritual life? When you are ready to share problems and sorrows of people, participate in it, and also, if possible, try to relieve it. And that's why you have, again, in the Voice of the Silence, I think right early on, one of the things which is mentioned is that if your eyes are not able to see the tears and you run away, if the cries of sorrow and pain, they are deafening your ears and you run away, and like a shy turtle, you withdraw yourself in the carapace of selfhood, then understand that of your silent God, thy soul is an unworthy shrine. Whenever you shrink, either out of indifference that what have I to do with his problem, or I can't bear it. In one way or another, if we have become too self-centered, then, sorry, our higher nature has nothing to do with us. Our higher nature doesn't want to communicate with us. We are not making our soul a worthy shrine, a temple for that God. So, the mark of a spiritual man is that he's always ready to share, listen, carry that pain home and come back with some answer. And that is where we are able to see that there is a difference between an emotionally empathetic person, which some of us are. We cry with that other person. We are disturbed to no end for 5 days. But we are of no help to that person. And that's how we have to cultivate what is called spiritual sensitivity. It's a completely different thing. Yes, you make a beginning by being empathetic at a human level, but something is missing there. And therefore we are, just like one child is crying and another one looks at the child, happens to be a friend, he feels even more, and even he starts crying and you have two children crying. None can help the other. So there are two individuals crying, which is of no use. On the other hand, someone who doesn't look to be very sympathetic or emotional is the person who can make a difference. And therefore, we have two sentences only in Light on the Path. One, it says, eyes are the windows of the soul. And we are told that before the eyes can see, they must be, as it were, made, before the eyes can see, they must be incapable of tears. And similarly, ears are called the gateway or doors from which the confusion, the knowledge of the confusion of the world enters you. But there also, before the ear can hear, it must have lost its sensitiveness. Now what is this eyes? Which, if they have the tears, they will not be able to see properly. Before the eyes can see, they must be incapable of tears. Taken literally also, we agree. When we are crying, and sometimes we are crying a lot, We have to wipe tears before we can see properly. Otherwise, you can't see. It's a misty kind of scene. Here, it's something else. You are not able to see it, the situation, the person, the depth of the whole thing as it is, till you are having tears. So, tears, what tears? Light on the Path says, tears are the moisture of life. And therefore, what are we supposed to do? It is only when the eyes become, without the tears, incapable of tears, that is to say, when you have set aside simple human emotions. The simple human emotions are getting irritated, getting angry, getting impatient, and also getting very, very emotional. These are simple human emotions. Till we have put it aside, we will not be able to see clearly. Then what are we supposed to do? When we are able to put aside the simple human emotions, then you are able to see exactly what is really bothering the person. This is what is going to give us a spiritual insight. And therefore, in that same book, we are being told, there it says, eyes are windows of the soul. Windows of that haunted palace in which it stays. If grief, dismay, disappointment or pleasure can shake the soul so that it loses its fixed hold on the calm spirit which inspires it, all is blurred, the windows are darkened. The light of the soul is useless. What is it talking about? If you are too much taken up by emotion, the analogy given in the same book is that you are able to stand upright because the center of gravity from the body falls within the base of support, your 2 feet. If from the center of gravity the perpendicular falls between the 2 feet, then you will be able to maintain your balance. What happens when we bend too much forward or too much backward? We know, we lose our balance. The center of gravity of man is his higher nature. And if we think we are doing too good by being extremely emotional, we are very sadly mistaken. We are anchored most of the time in the higher nature when we are normally behaving. But even too much emotion means we have thrown our weight away from our higher nature. And that's why we find, due to too much grief, people go mad. We find some mothers losing a very young child. Extreme grief. Madness results. You see? Loss of job, loss of status, whatever. People do go mad. What has happened? Our psychological base of support is this higher nature. And if we are psychically disturbed in any way, then that anchoring is gone and we really are landed in some other different thing. So, that is what is meant by you have to become incapable of tears. You have to put aside your simple human emotions and in fact be such a person that you are now able to, one aspect of you is able to get completely involved in the sorrow of the person. In fact, the book says he feels the pain and he feels the pleasure so acutely, much more than ordinary man. But he has acquired the discipline that he will not allow that pain or pleasure to shake him from his what is called as the fixed purpose. And therefore, another aspect of him becomes drashta and he is able to watch. Why the pain? What can I do about it? And most of the time can bring solace to the person help to the person and even relieve the misery. This person will not be seen to be externally emotion. You may feel very strange. This misery, no tears, not necessary. You see, someone has very nicely said, tears are no indication of warm heart. Nothing weeps more copiously than a chunk of ice. You keep an ice there and water begins to flow from there. So just because lots of tears come in your eyes doesn't mean that you are extremely warm-hearted person. For some people it is natural to cry at any time. After that they have all forgotten everything. Whereas those who are silently standing there, feeling your pain within their heart, far more probably than you, are the ones who will come back with some solution and solace. The other part is, the ears have to lose sensitiveness. The sensitiveness which we are sensitive to. Cries of bellowing elephant or silvery buzzing of the golden firefly means praise and blame, criticism. They put you on top of the ladder and bring you down next day. We are shattered. So all of these words of praise, blame, the confusion of the world, a lot of information, keep that all aside. That is what is meant by, if you want to really hear your inner voice, you have to cease to hear the many. Then you can hear the one. And so someone who has cultivated the sensitivity of the ear, he will be able to hear the voice of conscience, his own inner voice guiding him. So both the eyes and the ears have to be trained in such a manner that the personality begins to dissolve, and the more impersonal we are, the more capable we are to be sensitive and able to deal with the pain and sorrow of the world. It's been a very sketchy outline about sensitivity. We have 10 minutes for questions.
Yeah. When we see others suffering and moved from inside, but at times helpless to do anything, what can be done? Can good thoughts of positive kind, a positive kind towards person from heart, will it help?
Sometimes we see people in pain and we find that we are not able to do anything about them and really bring them out of that misery. Can good thoughts or positive thoughts help? Yes, certainly. Depends in what situation, what kind of pain it is, what kind of person it is. Lots of things in a way can be done. Sometimes nothing else but being by the side of the person is more than enough. The person may show that, no, please don't. I'll manage. No. And some people can gauge that need. That's something which our sensitivity can do. What exactly will help this person? Sometimes there are very good-minded people who will try to tell you about their own experiences and all that. The person is not receptive at that time. That's not the time when you tell such things happen to people or philosophize. They are very good-minded, but they don't know how to help. So the sensitivity really lies in kind of an intuitive perception as to what is this person requiring now. Just the silent presence around the person, coaxing the person to eat something, gradually taking that person to do something. Sometimes pain can paralyze a person. This also happens. And that's not good, because if the person remains wallowing in pain, sort of, then they can go on sinking, you see. And if that is what happens, then it takes a very long time to bring that up. So certainly, if you are not able to be at that place from far away, certainly if you have those powerful thoughts and a very deep sympathy, your thoughts and your feelings can really reach the person. Sometimes even from far away, you can uplift the person. Thoughts have that power. Feelings have that power. Why would Mr. Judge talk about desire of a certain kind? Where somebody wants to go and help people, unable to do it for some reason, and he says, your desire will strike like a vulcan, and you will find that done which you wanted to be the doer of. What you wanted to do, you will hear the next day, oh, someone has gone with lots of food and he's distributing there. Someone has gone with lots of money and he's giving it there. This is exactly what will happen. So it's the case of allowing that drop of tear to remain on our heart, nor ever brush it off till you hear the person is coming back to normalcy. It may be that distance doesn't allow us to do, but a warm heart and a genuinely warm heart can do a lot. A genuine feeling and thoughts can do quite a lot. And if you are near, it is how good you know the person and how you can bring the person out. Diverting the attention basically from that particular thing which matters to the person, and as we said, the whole of personality is now concentrated on that one thing, one incident. And our duty is to just divert the attention. It requires skill, it requires sympathy. So what is the question?
What is the solution?
Are they suffering or are they being heartless for other people suffering, or both? Then what can we do? If the person has seen a lot of sorrow all throughout the life and therefore they have become so heartless that it is very, very difficult to really console that person or help that person. Again, and also you find that that person is quite indifferent when other people are in their sorrow. So what do we do? In our regular relationship, we try to be as humane as we can. This is the only thing. In our regular relations, we should try to be as humane as we can. Somewhere, the heart has not completely locked up. Somewhere it is there. Sometimes we say even a criminal, when he looks at a child smiling or in pain, something happens in his heart. This person is not even of that category. A little hard-hearted the person has become because of too many sorrows coming one after the other. It only requires right kind of treatment from us and right kind of experiences also in life. Maybe slowly and gradually the person will change. It will take time. You see, because sorrow is something which does not have the same impact on everyone. Some people, they have difficulty and sorrow and they become hard-hearted. Some people have difficulty and sorrow and they become extremely timid. They are incapable of doing anything. Some people have these difficulties and sorrows and they become really someone who is very hot-tempered, dislike all the people, and as it were, the whole world is responsible for their sorrow, and therefore they are cutting themselves off from other people. So it changes from person to person. Now we have to do only one thing. Tender, loving care. This is what we are always told. When people have gone through a lot of sorrows or only one instance where we are there, but when we come across such a person, there should be only tender, loving care. We handle that person especially with great love, great care, consistently, as they say, if the water falls on the stone for a long time, even that stone wears away. You would feel that this stone, go to Marine Drive and you find after a long time such big boulders, and now they have reduced in size because the same water over and over again. This is there, which a human love, human care, human sympathy can do to a person. Completely ordinary people have reported this. Someone is a principal in college or school, some staff member, extremely difficult to handle, and this person always handles with a lot of attention, care, giving importance, being kind, and at the end finds that the person has changed. We are having this instance, which we sometimes used to. This story looks like a real story in the Reader's Digest. The boy who was parentless and had really gone out of hand. What to do with this child? Goes from one school to the other, some foster parents or whatever are raising him. Finally, he comes to a particular principal in the school, and right from the beginning he says, I know, I'm a very naughty boy, I break things, this, whatever the other people had been telling, he rattles out and then takes his feet, puts it on the table and sits and looks at the principal. The principal looks and says, what to do? And inwardly he is invoking Christ and saying, Christ, help me. That thing is called Father John's toughest customer. He is the toughest customer which this Father John is encountering. And then he looks at the boy and says, no, not at all. You are a perfectly good child. You didn't get the right teachers, I tell you. And the boy was really amazed. Nobody has ever told him that. And here he's saying, it's not your fault. You never got good teachers. And then he sits properly, starts listening to him. Things were all right. You see? So the student feels that it's not as if there is a theosophical answer to it. It's something where how concerned we are for humanity. If there is a genuine concern, which we did see in some of our senior students, and we found that any kind of situation, any kind of people, they could come up with the right things to say and handle the person and the situation. There is no clear-cut formula for this. There is a prompting from the heart which will tell you how to handle this person or this situation. This is what the saintly people do. Why don't they say that, what do I do with this criminal who has come in my ashram and he is about to create havoc? No. His own inner development, and that's what has to happen with us. Our own inner development has to reach certain stage that we don't have to ask anyone. We know exactly what to do with this person. But basically there must be always this feeling of kindness and love that I want to help as many people as I can in my life. And it doesn't matter how rude, how crude, how mean they are. As Mr. Judd says, that there is a lot of meanness in the world and you encounter that. So do one thing. Have a lot of compassion in your heart. Compassion for yourself and compassion for them. Otherwise, over a period, your own heart will become hard and indifferent. So, for safety's sake, don't allow your heart to become indifferent and hard. So keep having compassion for people. It's very difficult, but if we do that, we will come to the stage when we can handle any kind of person. Time is more than running. Thank you.